Pets are good for you and for your mental health, but they can also be a health hazard. One man in the United Kingdom suffered injuries similar to being in a car crash after his hairless Sphinx kitten attached itself to his leg. The 59-year-old man then fell down the stairs, breaking bones, fracturing his spine, and cracking his skull, according to a Daily Mail report. Watch out for those pets, folks! This is Pulse Check. I'm Carmen Pond. On Tuesday, the Biden administration again asked Congress for $10 billion in emergency health funding for next year, most of it to fight COVID-19. This matters because we're not out of the pandemic woods yet, as some circulating virus variants render treatments ineffective for people whose immune systems are compromised, putting them at high risk of severe disease and death. Abortions will again be allowed in Georgia for the first time since July, after a judge in the state on Tuesday overturned a law prohibiting most abortions after about 6 weeks of pregnancy. The ruling, however, is likely to end up at the Georgia Supreme Court. And for Congress, health privacy is top of mind. As cyber attacks in healthcare have increased, so too has urgency around creating more safeguards for Americans' health data and the ways it's used. I ask Root Reader what lawmakers are doing about it.
So this is a big question right now that lawmakers and lobbying groups and special interest groups are all thinking about, which is sort of, what do we do about this data that is being collected by apps, by third-party data aggregators, by advertisers like Google, that contains really sensitive data about our health, right? Think about your Fitbit that collects, you know, step data or heart rate data. Maybe even it's just your phone collecting geolocation data about where you are at any given point, right? So basically what lawmakers are considering is how should they deal with the sensitive information that is out there and not currently protected? And they have a lot of different options, right? But, you know, two options that are sort of out there or that I got into in this recent reporting that I was doing is either to extend HIPAA, which is a 1996 law that currently guards data that's inside of electronic health records. So data that your doctor is really dealing with, or to create an entirely new set of rules that are really tailored toward the digital age, right? And how we deal with and how we interact with data and online entities like Google, Facebook, and these third-party aggregators.
Right. So for those who don't know, I'm from Europe. And when I moved to the US a couple of years ago, I was shocked by the amount of data that is unprotected and by how it can be used. In my brain, I thought, well, you know, this is health data. It's obviously protected. So I have become a bit more apprehensive about downloading new health apps or putting information about, you know, my sleep and other things. HIPAA, you said it's from 1996, so it sounds like a lifetime ago.
Yeah.
How much are people leaning towards updating it, and how much is there already an idea of how much people are, and lawmakers in this case, are leaning towards coming up with a whole new set of rules or just sort of like bringing HIPAA into the digital age?
It's not really clear yet. I will say this. I know that for years, people have been talking about updating HIPAA in general, right? Because it is from 1996 and it's not really built for the way that we handle our health today, right? So that has definitely been an ongoing conversation for a while now. And it just really hasn't ever garnered enough support. You know, it's not a sexy issue. And so it just hasn't really ever gone anywhere. On the other hand, lawmakers know, I think at this point, that they really have to do something about general data privacy. Obviously, we've seen Europe put out GDPR. California has rules now that, you know, go about trying to at least take steps to protect some of the data on the internet and at least give people some sort of agency over their data and, you know, opportunity to opt in or out of these collection practices. So there was an effort earlier this year, the American Data Privacy and Protection Act, which got really far. And that's more of a general data privacy rule. Now, this bill was hoping to sort of like raise data protection for kids, particularly under 17. And then it had a carve out for HIPAA so that this wouldn't really like that basically HIPAA would be a separate thing and deal with data from, you know, electronic health records and the sort of things that HIPAA deals with would just be like a separate thing altogether. But it didn't really account for online health data. Now, ADPPA, from what I understand at this point, isn't likely to go anywhere. You know, it's probable that future legislation next year will pull from it. But it itself, you know, one of the major problems with it is that states don't really want this federal rule to preempt all this other state legislation, and it would have. And so that was sort of a roadblock for that particular bill.
Got it.
In October, health systems had to start handing over people's electronic health records to them. So people, you and I, we now have a right to our electronic medical records and to get that data from our healthcare providers. Now, as soon as your doctor turns over that data to you, it's no longer protected by HIPAA.
I guess since the eyes are still on the results of the midterm elections, my question and probably the question in many people's mind now is how the results of this election, how do this impact this debate? What does your reporting indicate?
So I think we can still expect new bills coming through because this is a bipartisan issue. And given that we have a very split Congress coming up and have had a split Congress in general, I don't think that this is going to be the kind of issue that gets tabled. Furthermore, we might have a little movement in the end of the year push. Senator Bill Cassidy sponsored a bill called the Health Data Use and Privacy Commission Act earlier this year. And basically what he wants to do is to create a panel that recommends changes to health privacy laws. So basically this panel would sort of do all the weighing of options that we've talked about, right? Should it be a new bill? Should we update HIPAA? Should we do both? What does a panel of experts think about this issue and use that panel to make recommendations to Congress so that they can come up with legislation? Another reason that privacy is bound to get another look next year is because something that's come up, and this sort of has also raised the health data issue a little higher than it used to be, which is that because of new abortion restrictions in states, there's been a lot of concern about health data collected in period tracking apps and also in mobile phones generally, because your phones collect a lot of data about you and they can even tell where you are and if you are in proximity to an abortion clinic, let's say. So there is a fair amount of interest in protecting that kind of data to ensure that that data can't then be subpoenaed by law enforcement in those states where abortion is restricted and used against individuals who try to seek an abortion despite local laws.
Thank you so much for talking to us today. Always fascinating to hear what you're working on and what you come up with.
Thanks so much for inviting me.
The nation's pediatric beds are filling up with respiratory syncytial virus and flu patients, and COVID-19 cases are beginning to slowly tick up again.
So our modeling of counterfactual scenarios demonstrated that improved uptake of the bivalent booster would substantially reduce pediatric hospitalizations as well as school absenteeism.
This is Allison Galvani.
And I'm the director of the Yale Center for Infectious Disease Modeling and Analysis.
Dr. Galvani co-authored a new study published yesterday by the Commonwealth Fund.
So we projected outcomes under a range of booster coverage scenarios. Specifically, we compared a baseline strategy of recent vaccination rates to vaccination rates that were achieved last year for flu vaccinations. And we projected that the accelerated booster campaign would avert more than 22 million days of school absenteeism and more than 38,000 pediatric hospitalizations, of which nearly 9,000 would be expected to require intensive care. We've previously done modeling that has highlighted hospitalizations and deaths to the overall population. But we thought, given current rates of COVID in children, school absenteeism is a significant factor. And reducing hospitalizations is particularly important for the fall and winter this year, given that there's already been an early onset of both RSV and influenza, which is straining pediatric hospital capacity nationwide. So concurrent surge in pediatric COVID hospitalizations would be prevented by an accelerated booster campaign.
And that's our show. Our music is by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Annie Reese is our producer. Our healthcare team editors are Eli Reyes, Dan Goldberg, Barbara Van Tine, Beth Belton, and Sean Zeller. Jenny Ament is the executive producer of audio at Politico. I'm Carmen Pond. Subscribe and follow Pulse Check for a new episode every day. And subscribe to our newsletters where you can read this reporting, Pulse, Future Pulse, and Prescription Pulse. Thanks for listening.